I thank you for being here today. Our beloved Acharyas often quote a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Pungsang Paro Dharamo Yato Bhakti. Savai Pungsang Paro Dharamo, what is? Ahoitiki aprati hata yagatma superseded. That the supreme occupation for all humanity is to engage in the loving service of the Lord. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. That is definition of love. Unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Lord. That is the constitutional nature of the soul. It is our nitya dharma, our eternal occupation. Everything else, any other motive or any other activity that is impelled by such a motive is superficial, artificial, and foreign to the nature of the Atma or soul. Savai pung sang paro dharamo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahoitaki apratihata yayatma supersedate. Unmotivated is described by Sri Rupa Goswami that the desire is selfless. It is simply for the pleasure of the object of our love. There is no ego. There is no selfishness, either on a gross or subtle plane. If we desire material profit, material facilities, material protection, then it is contaminated. If we desire liberation, if we desire pratishtha, recognition, appreciation, fame, if we desire mystic powers, then it is not actually spiritual. Today, because it is Kali Yuga, people have very cheap conceptions of what is spiritual. If someone could look at your palm and tell you what's going to happen tomorrow, that is spiritual. If someone can perform actual magic tricks, reading your mind, controlling your mind, changing one's form, producing various objects simply by the chanting of mantra, this is considered spiritual. If a person is able to resist so many temptations, that is also considered spiritual. But actual spiritual means the inherent quality or nature of the soul. Because the material world is matter. It is the maya shakti, the illusory potency of the Lord. What is spiritual is actually what is in harmony with the eternal nature of the soul and God. So it is actually prema. It is actually love that is spiritual. And the nature of the soul is to serve with love, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, bhakti, or devotional service, is a true spiritual path. Because even from the most beginning stages of a neophyte, new devotee, who really doesn't know much of anything, he's taught that you're the eternal servant of the Lord and how to please the Lord. To strive to purify one's heart is devotional service. It is pleasing to the Lord. So that is unmotivated. No desire for liberation, for material enjoyment, gross or subtle, or mystic cities. But in order for the soul to be satisfied, our service must also be uninterrupted. That means there is no circumstance, no material condition that will ever disturb our enthusiasm to please Krishna. Because bhakti is on a transcendental platform. As our heart becomes purified, there actually is nothing that can disturb our service to the Lord. Just like that one scholar asked Srila Prabhupada, Gita matra sparashastha konteya sitosna shukadukata agama payanonityastham sthitikshasva bharata. Krishna tells Arjuna that the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and all of these dualities are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Skyan of Bharat, and one should learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. And Arjuna heard those teachings, and he realized those teachings, and put them into practice in his life. But just a few days later, his son, Abhimanyu, was killed. He was crying. He was very disturbed. And Subhadra, who happens to be Krishna's own sister, the Yogamaya potency of the Lord, was also crying because her son was dead. So this scholar asked, if he's not supposed to be disturbed, why was he disturbed? And Prabhupada explained, in the nature of affection and loving relationships with family members and so forth, separation from a great Vaishnav like Abhimanyu is very disturbing. It's natural for a father to feel that affection for a child. But the fact was, he continued his service with the same and even more enthusiasm even after this happened. Because his enthusiasm, his desire, and the execution of his service was not disturbed, therefore he was not actually disturbed. Because Krishna is bhavagrahi. Krishna accepts the devotional sentiment which is within the heart of a devotee. Krishna accepts the purpose and intent in which something is offered. He does not need the thing that you offer. Krishna is living eternally in Chintamani Dham, where everything is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. Everything is fully conscious. There's no matter. Nothing is temporary. That is the spiritual world. What does Krishna need of us in this material world? He's living with unlimited gopas and gopis whose bodies are eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, eternally youthful. What does he need our bodies? They're subjected to disease. You need some external light just to see them. In the spiritual world, Gita tells, there's no need for sun or moon. Everything is self-effulgent. The bodies and the gopas and the gopis, they all effulgent. There's no suns or moons. And even if there is, there's no need for them. And they're always... they're made out of spiritual nectar. They don't bleed and get diseased and smell horrible in certain situations. What does Krishna need our body? What does Krishna need our efforts? And what do we offer him? Just some mundane things. But whatever we offer, if it is with an intent to please him, to serve him. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti priyachyati. Taraham bhakti ashnami bhayaratman. Krishna tells in Gita, even a leaf of flower, fruit or water, if it is offered with devotion, I will accept. Krishna accepts our devotion. Krishna is pleased by our attitude. And actually, even in this world, in matters of love, it is the attitude that actually attracts a person's heart. But in devotional service, Krishna, who is seated within the heart, who knows perfectly our every motivation, he is accepting that. And actually, there is no material condition that could disturb a pure devotee's sincere desire to please the Lord. Therefore, ahoitiki apratihata. This is what a Vaishnav strives for. Just like Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion, about a very simple and humble South Indian Brahmin from Pratishthanapur. He was very poor. He had no wealth. Even though he may have tried, it just never came. But he was not unhappy by his poverty-stricken condition. He was thinking, it must be due to my previous bad activities that I am so poor. And also, it is the will of the Lord. Therefore, he was never complaining, he was never unhappy. Actually, this is a wonderful thing. Unhappiness is not your condition. And happiness is not your condition. Unhappiness or happiness is how you perceive things, how you interpret the situation that you're in. Is it not? Someone can give you a wonderful gift and you could be miserable. Yes? Have you ever done that? Doesn't matter. We've seen people who are extraordinarily wealthy, but there's no peace of mind, there's no satisfaction of heart. It's just a passion for more and more and more. And someone else, even if they're dying, even if everything's taken away, even if the whole world is condemning them, they're happy. Why? They're seeing Krishna. I just want to serve you and please you. Whatever's happening, let it be. But I have your name. I have your name. And somehow I'm getting enough prasad to survive, which is more than I deserve. I'm happy. A grateful heart can be happy. An ungrateful heart can never be happy. Because an ungrateful heart always wants something more from everyone. An ungrateful heart always wants something more from everyone, from God, and from the environment. Yes? In whatever situation, they naturally perceive what's wrong. But a grateful heart considers, I do not deserve anything but the worst. If I even get some little drop of appreciation, some little drop of facility to walk or to talk, I'm grateful. Think about it. What a dumb man would do to even speak a sentence. And we're speaking all day long. All kinds of nonsense. Yes? Shamsundar Prabhu, please come. Please, please. Okay. A deaf person, what they would give to hear a Srimad Bhagavatam Katha, if they're a devotee. What they would give. How grateful they would be. And we're hearing katas and falling asleep, thinking, when would it end? When will prasad come? A person who's lame, how grateful would they be if they could walk if they could run, if they could dance before the deities. And we're dancing and dancing and dancing. And we're thinking about all our troubles and problems in life. Yes. Sometimes I get asthma. And you can't breathe. And then you start really thinking, how grateful, how grateful. Give the whole world just for a breath. Yes, more valuable than all things in the entire... Indra cannot give you the wealth that would equal to being able to breathe. This is the unfortunate situation of life in the conditioned state. We usually do not appreciate something unless we don't have it. And when we do have, we're always thinking about what we don't have. Yes? Of course, that's a good way to make a lot of money. It's a good way to go up in the ladder of politics. You always want something greater. But you can never be satisfied. But in Krishna consciousness, we're willing to work with dynamic energy, not because we want more for ourselves, but we want to do more service for God. We want to do better for the Vaishnavas and for humanity. That is ahoitaki apratihata. So when we are actually grateful, we can actually feel happiness. And gratitude is a matter of perception. Two people see the same thing. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would see a tree and think of Vrindavan and fall unconscious in ecstasy. He would see the ocean and think of Yamuna and jump in ecstatic love, manifesting all the eight, this Ashtasattvika Bhava, the eight symptoms of ecstatic love. He would see a sand dune, just a hill, and think it's Govardhan, an ecstatic love. Yes? We're seeing trees. Here in Bombay, we're seeing ocean. We're seeing sand. And what happens to our heart? We're thinking, traffic, so terrible traffic. And the ocean's there. We're not thinking Jamuna in ecstasy. We're thinking, why is this person in front of me so slow? Seeing tree, and we're thinking, oh, why this person didn't respect me today, and why so many problems, and how am I going to pay my bills? We're not thinking of the Kadamba and Tamal trees of Vrindavan. So happiness is perception, what we remember. So Krishna tells us, always remember me and never forget me. That's the way to be happy. So this Brahman, he was very simple and very poor and very humble. And he was always eager to associate with great saints. So in his simple mood, he would regularly go, whenever possible, to hear the katha of the Vaishnavas. So one day, he was listening and he heard the Vaishnav speaker explain how Krishna accepts whatever sentiment a devotee has within his or her heart. Krishna actually will accept whatever offerings we make in our mind if they have the intention to please him, even if we don't have anything materially. So this Brahmin became very enlivened by this idea because he had nothing to offer. He was in utter poverty, materially. And he had so many desires to please the Lord and worship the Lord. So with simple faith in the words he heard from the sadhus and the scriptures, he began to offer grand, opulent offerings to the Lord every day. He would take his bath in River Godavari And after taking his bath and cleaning himself very nicely, he would go to a very secluded place where nobody would go, on the banks of the river. And there he would do little pranayama and some exercise just to stabilize his mind nicely, and then he would meditate. Not an impersonal meditation. He would meditate on the beautiful form of Krishna. He would meditate on Krishna in a beautiful temple. Then he would bathe the Lord. And after bathing the Lord, he would give the Lord wonderful ornaments. He was actually, in his mind, going through all the motions. He would put lovely jewels upon the Lord's neck. And he would dress the Lord with elegant silks. He would put helmet and ankle bells. Most costly decorations to ornament the deity. And then he would personally go and collect sandalwood. It's not that he just had sandalwood. He would go out and collect it. And then he would bring it back and make the sandalwood paste and offer that to the Lord. Then he would go out into the forests in his meditation and collect very fragrant, splendid flowers with his hands, one at a time, and put them in a basket and make garlands and put those garlands on the Lord. And then he had golden and silver pots. And he would take water, the purified water of the river Godavari, and offer it to the Lord. And then in silver and golden pots, he would go to the river Ganges, Yamuna, Kaveri, Narmada, and collect those waters and bring them back and offer them to the Lord. And he would sing before the Lord beautiful songs of love. He did this every single day for years and years and years. He had nothing, but he would offer Krishna everything. One day, he started a fire in his meditation, because he had no proper food. But in his meditation, he started a nice fire, and then he filled the pot with milk and rice and natural sugar and some camphor and cooked it to make sweet rice, kheer. And then it was time for the offering. And he wanted to offer that kheer in a pleasing way. It should be very cool to refresh the Lord. But thinking that I had just completed cooking it not long ago, it still might be hot. I do not want to offer hot sweet rice to the Lord. So just to test in his meditation, he touched the pot to see if it had cooled down enough. But it was very hot, and his finger was burnt, and it hurt him so much that his whole meditation broke. And he came back into external consciousness and looked at his finger, and it was actually burnt. The Brahmin was really bewildered. Because he was humble, he couldn't understand how this could have possibly happened. Meanwhile, beyond the Viraja, the borders of material and spiritual existence, way, way up in the Paravyoma, in the spiritual sky, in the planet of Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, Lord Narayan is sitting with Lakshmi and other goddesses of fortune. And he smiles very humorously. So Lakshmi Devi asks, "Why are you smiling and laughing in this way? What has brought that upon you?" And he didn't say anything. The Lord called for one of his assistants and told him to bring that Brahman back home, back to Godhead in Vaikuntha. So the Brahman is sitting there looking at his burnt finger, and all of a sudden, he's brought to Vaikuntha Loka in the spiritual world. And he's brought right before Lord Narayan. And he bows down in surrender. And then Lord Narayan explained to all his goddesses of fortune exactly what had happened. For so many years, this Brahman was offering me the love of his heart from the material consideration. No one recognized, respected, or gave any credibility to this Brahman. But the Lord within his heart accepted every single thing he offered. Because in this world, if you offer Krishna a roti, what is a roti? It is wheat and water and maybe little salt. Yes? Cooked with some fire. It's matter. And thought is also matter. Krishna explains in Gita there are 8 material elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the false ego. They are all material elements. But when it is offered with devotion, Krishna accepts. You offer a material thing, but Krishna accepts that thing when it is offered with devotion. Similarly, if we offer that thing in our thoughts, Krishna will accept it with devotion. Of course, if we have a lot of material things and we're using them to enjoy personally, and we're offering our thoughts to Krishna, that is not bhakti. Yat karosi yat ashnasi yat juhoshi tatasi yat yat tapasi asi konti yat tat kurushu madarapanam. Whatever we offer should be, whatever we have should be for Krishna. If we have material things, we use them for the glory of the Lord, for the welfare of others. If we have nothing, that same sentiment will be completely acceptable. Apratihata ahoitaki. This is evidence, Srila Prabhupada explains, of how there is no material impediment to devotional service. All that is required is our honest sincerity with an intent to please the Lord. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is another example. So many examples, but I'll tell one or two. Or maybe more. There is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas in Katva. Nityananda Prabhu guided him to Shantipur, although he wanted to go to Vrindavan. From Shantipur, Sachi Devi and the Vaishnavas requested he go to Puri to live. After a short time, he took 2 years tour through South India, inundating the whole land with Nam Sankirtan and Krishna Prem. And then he came back to Jagannath Puri and expressed to his desire to his devotees to go to Vrindavan. And as he was departing, most all of his associates came with him. But because Gadadhar Pandit took a vow that he would never leave the vicinity in which his deity resided, Gopinath, he was not allowed to leave the precincts of Puri. But when Lord Chaitanya saw that he was coming too, he ultimately sent Gadadhar Pandit back, which very much hurt Gadadhar's heart. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came to a river, the king, Pratapa Rudra, sent his royal boat to carry Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu across the river. And he sent so many other boats from his military and his army for all the Vaishnavas. In fact, the king took a massive amount of his treasury to serve the Vaishnavas. When you serve the Vaishnavas, you serve Krishna. When you serve Krishna, you're watering the root of the tree when Krishna's pleased. Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyanana sambhavad. When we perform the sacrifice of devotional service, then all things are provided. He had that faith. Wasn't theoretical. Wherever the Lord and his devotees stopped on the way, he built guest house, he had wonderful feasts of prasad. As long as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the kingdom of Orissa, there was royal boats to carry them across each river, there was prasad, there was everything. Then he came into Bengal, where the king had no jurisdiction. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the river Ganga, and then went to Vidyanagar, which is in Navadvip. Vidyanagar was the place of the residence of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother, Vidyavachaspati. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at his house. And while there, hundreds and thousands of people were coming to see the Lord. It was a wonderful scene. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people were coming just for the darshan of the Lord. And the Lord would not come out. They were just chanting and chanting and chanting, and finally when the Lord came out, they went mad in devotional sentiments. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just raised his arms and told everyone to chant the holy name. And these crowds, everyone wanted to see him. Everyone was just so eager. But the crowds were becoming bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Actually, it describes when these people of Navadvip heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come back after taking sannyas. They were just running. Thousands and thousands, right? They were running through the forests. And by the time they got to the river, there was all these paths in the forest, just by their trampling. And when they came to the rivers, there were hundreds and thousands of people, and only a few boats. A boat that usually only holds about 50 or 60 people, thousands of people were crowded into it. And some of the boats just fell apart right in the water. So what to do? That wasn't going to stop them. Now in India, very few people know how to swim. How many people here today know proper swimming, where you can actually be in water and not drown? How many people do not know swimming? It was like that at that time too. But they were so enthusiastic to see Lord Chaitanya that people who didn't even know swimming forgot that they didn't know swimming and swam across the river. Others just picked up an old banana tree trunk and just floated on that. Other people just grabbed some piece of fruit or something and held on to it as a raft, and it took them across the river. The river Ganga, which is very wide and has a very, very strong current, was just literally totally, you couldn't even see the water. There was just hundreds and hundreds and thousands of heads just crossing it. And when they came to Vidyanagar, the house of Vidyavachaspati, everyone wanted to see the Lord. There were these little straw huts and hundreds of people standing on it, but the huts didn't break. There were hundreds of people climbing one tree, and not a single branch would break. The Lord protected their desire to see Him. But the crowds were so big, after about 5 or 6 days of this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to be alone. So without telling anything to anyone, he just disappeared. And everyone's crying, "We want to see the Lord. We want to see Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu." And Vidya Vachaspati is looking, "Where is he? Where is he?" And he says, "I don't know. I can't find him." And then they started chastising him. He said, "You call yourself a sadhu. Sadhus, when they get sweets, they distribute them. They don't eat them all for themselves. The Lord is in your house and you're so greedy, you're not sharing him with us." So he was really under pressure. But he didn't know where the Lord was. Then someone came and whispered in his ear, "He's at Kuliagram, at the house of Madhava Das." So he said, "He's at Kuliagram at the house of Madhava Das," and all the hundreds and thousands of people started running and crossing the rivers and went to... And there Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came out. And he raised his arms very high, and everyone was in such a grateful state, and told everyone, "Just chant the holy names. There is no other way of deliverance in this age of Kali except Harinam Sankirtan." In Kulia, which is a beautiful little village on bank of Ganga in Navadweep Dham, the most sinful offenders of the Lord and His devotees came to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. Gopal Chapala, who with a heart overflowing with wicked and cruel envy, tried to destroy Srivas Thakur's life. And because of that offense, he was suffering horribly from leprosy. He came before Lord Chaitanya in a humble state. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only relieved him of his leprosy, but he gave him Krishna Prem, the ultimate perfection of life. Devananda Pandit, who was very austere and very deeply learned, but had made a very terrible offense against Srivas Thakur and always misinterpreted the Srimad Bhagavatam when he taught it to others, he came before Lord Chaitanya in a humble state of mind, begged forgiveness from Srivas, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately in Kuliagram gave him ecstatic love of Krishna, eternal entrance into his abode. Yes, in Kuliagram, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, people who blasphemed and sinned against him and his devotees, the most wicked and fallen people, by the hundreds and thousands, he was giving them all love of God. That is the power of the Lord. And then the Lord departed from Kulia to Vrindavan. Now we will start today's lecture. There was a simple brahmachari. His name was Prajumana Das Brahmachari. But he had spontaneous love for Lord Narasingha Dev. That was his Ishtadev. In fact, Narasingha Nanda Prajumana Brahmachari, he considered Sri Chaitanya he could understand and realize that Lord Chaitanya was non-different than Lord Narasingha Dev. And because of his absorption in devotional service and his happiness in worshiping Narsingadev, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally gave him a new name, Narasinghananda Brahmachari. Now, like the traditional brahmacharis of those days, he had no possessions, nothing. But he had amazing desires to serve. So when Lord Chaitanya was leaving Kulia for Vrindavan, it's a long way. And in those days, there was no highways, there was no railways, there was no airways. You walked. And they're going through jungles and going along the banks of rivers. There was no proper roads. But Narasinghananda Brahmachari really wanted Lord Chaitanya to have such a pleasing and happy journey to Vrindavan. So he sat down in meditation and began to construct a very wide, smooth road. Then he covered that road with bricks made out of gold. Then he inlaid precious jewels upon those golden bricks, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, sapphires. And then he took sweet, fragrant flowers. And in his meditation with his hands, he separated all the petals from the flowers and made a thick blanket of stemless flower petals upon that road, so that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet would only feel the very soft texture of the flowers and experience the sweet fragrance. And then on either side of the road, he landscaped. He excavated beautiful kunds. He didn't fill them with water. He filled them with nectar. And on the lake, and there was bakula trees and banyan trees and kadamba trees and tamal trees, all wonderful, wonderful trees on either side of the road. And each one was blooming with fragrant flowers, fruits. And in these lakes of nectar, there were full-blown lotus flowers and very auspicious birds. He was putting right on the trees these birds that were singing such sweet, sweet songs for the pleasure of the Lord. And he was in his mind constructing this road 1 foot at a time, 1 meter at a time. But the most wonderful thing, please listen carefully. If you hear this fact with faith, your life will never be the same. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he was walking along the thorny paths, he was only seeing with his eyes what was in Narasinghananda Brahmachari's mind. He was seeing this bejeweled road covered with flower petals. He was seeing the lakes and the trees and hearing the birds that were simply in the heart of Narasinghananda Brahmachari. But Mahaprabhu was seeing it with his eyes. Why? Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Bhavagrahi. That means he accepts the devotional attitude, the sentiments of devotion within the heart of his or her of his devotees. That is the highest reality. The highest reality is not the temporary objects being experienced by the temporary blunt senses. The highest reality is the intention of the devotion of the heart of a devotee. That is reality. This is all Maya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Vishnupriya just before he left for his sannyas lila. He said, there is only two things that are true within this world. There is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is non-different than His name, non-different than His Bhagavatam, non-different than His deity. There is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is His devotees. And what is a devotee? One who has bhakti, one who has devotion. That exchange of devotion, of love, that is reciprocated between the Lord and His devotee is the only supreme eternal truth. Everything else is illusory. This is what it means when it says that the Lord is bhava-grahi. He is the absolute truth who only accepts truth. So yes, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was seeing the splendid devotional service. It would have cost billions of rupees to make a road like that. Yes? I mean, what, we have these just not far from Chopati Radha Gopinath Temple. There is a whole street of jewelry shops. Yes? If you took every single jewel in every one of those shops to put on the road, and it was a wide road, you would only cover a few meters. Yes? And Nrsingananda Brahmachari was hundreds of miles. But evil. We're speaking about an offering of billions of rupees. Crores and crores and crores of rupees. And gold bricks and nectarine lakes. But he was in poverty. He just lived in a little straw hut and went out and did madhukari, begged for a little rice every day. But the reality is that the Lord accepted his devotion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ram Keli with all these hundreds and thousands. By this time there were millions of devotees. Because wherever the Lord went, the entire town would come to see his beautiful golden form. And when they saw his ecstatic compassion for them, and when he raised his arms and induced them to chant the holy names, they became mad. They became so attracted to the Lord that people were just leaving everything. Husbands forgot that they were husbands. Wives forgot that they were wives. Children forgot that they were children. Everyone just would immerse themselves in Nam Sankirtan, dancing behind the Lord, loudly chanting the holy name. When they came to Ram Keli, which was the place of the Nawab Hussein Shah, who hated Hindus and outlawed all public demonstration of Hindu religion, went right into his capital, where his house was. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the king of all kings. He doesn't have to worry anything. And a devotee who depends on the mercy of the Lord doesn't have to worry either. So they all came dancing. It was tumultuous. Can you imagine millions of people at a time loudly chanting in ecstasy? Cannot imagine. And the king was hearing this. What is this? He sent one of his assistants. Tell me what this is. He told, never seen anything like this. This man, this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has a beautiful golden complexion. He has lovely lotus-like eyes. He has long arms that extend beneath his knees. His nose is like a sesame flower. His lips are like freshly cut bimba fruit. His teeth are like rows of pearls. His neck is like a lion. His gait is like an elephant. there's constant streams of tears which are flowing like rivers from his eyes in ecstatic love. His hairs are standing on end. Sometimes he leaps to the air, and in ecstasy he falls unconscious and falls to the ground, and the stones break. But yet he's not harmed. I have never seen such love. I've never seen such devotion. And besides that, there are millions of people who are mad after him, following him, giving up everything for his association. Yes, we have had many saints come to our town, but no one is like this. The Nawab Hussein Shah didn't even see the Lord. Just by hearing about him, faith awakened in his heart. He asked another one of his assistants, "Have you seen anything?" This particular assistant was actually a devotee, so he wanted to protect the Lord from the king's wrath. He said, "Yes, don't believe all these rumors. Everyone exaggerates." He said, "He's just a simple sannyasi with a few followers doing some madhukari. No, nothing to think about." And the king, when he heard this, "Ha! How could you blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this way, calling him just a simple sannyasi just with a few followers? I understand that he is the Supreme Lord. How do I understand? Because for me to get anyone to follow me, I have to pay them a lot, or else I have to terrify them with threats. But without giving any charity, without giving anything, this person has millions of people surrendering their lives unconditionally to him. Therefore, I can understand he is the Supreme Lord. Don't ever say he's just a penniless, insignificant sannyasi. I declare it today that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can perform Harinam Sankirtan in the streets of Ramakeli or anywhere in my kingdom with full facility and all encouragement. That is the law that I make today." Hare Krishna. That night, Rupan Sanatan Goswamis came to meet Lord Chaitanya. And that most historical exchange of love and humility was revealed at that time. Rupan Sanatan, they were the prime minister and home minister of the entire kingdom. They had fabulous wealth, prestige, knowledge, youth, beauty, everything. But they approached the Lord as the most sinful, the most fallen, the most desperate. They begged the Lord for mercy. And because of the genuine and honest humility of these two brothers, Lord Chaitanya placed his head on their feet, embraced them, and accepted them as his own, and empowered them to perform the supreme welfare work for all of humanity, to spread the Lord, the glories of pure unalloyed bhakti. This most intimate and important of all exchanges took place in Ramkeli. Afterward, Rupan Sanatan Goswami told Lord Chaitanya that perhaps you should not go to Vrindavan with hundreds and thousands and millions of people. Vrindavan is a solitary place. It will be too disturbing to go with so many. Just go alone or with one other. Lord Chaitanya, after giving his blessings to Rupan Sanatan Goswamis, continued to Vrindavan until he came to Kanai Natashala. Kanai Natashala is across the Ganges, a little ways from Ramkeli in the state of Bihar. It is considered to be just like Vrindavan. In Kanai Natashala, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing Sankirtan. And they had there wonderful, wonderful collection of paintings of Krishna and his leelas. And people would gather there to look at these paintings and to speak the glories of Krishna's teachings as pastimes and perform Nam Sankirtan. And one day, after taking his bath in the river Ganges, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really astonished all his devotees. He turned to them and said, "We will return to Puri." He was thinking in his mind that what Sanatana Goswami was saying is correct. So he went back to Puri. The amazing thing is this. Narsinghananda Brahmachari, he was back in Navadvip Dham. Just from Kulia, he was just paving the road. He was just building and constructing this incredible road for the Lord to enjoy on his way. And before Lord Chaitanya even made this declaration to return to Puri, Narsinghananda Brahmachari, in his meditation, tried with all of his mental devotional powers to continue the road. As I was saying, he was just constructing it meter after meter after meter. And he couldn't get behind Kanai Natashala. He tried and he tried and he tried, but he couldn't make that road go beyond Kanai Natashala. So he came out of his meditation and declared to all the Vaishnavas, "Lord Chaitanya is not going to Vrindavan. He'll go to Kanai Natashala and then he will come back to Puri." And devotees, what? For years he wanted to go to Vrindavan. Why will he not go to Vrindavan? This is the power of how the Lord reciprocated with the love of his devotee. And when he returned to Puri, he told the devotees, "Krishna would not allow me to go to Vrindavan because I caused pain to Gadadhar Pandit's heart." If you hurt a Vaishnav, you cannot enter into Vrindavan. You will not have the favor of Krishna in the true and spiritual sense. He said, "I will not go to Vrindavan unless Gadadhar Pandit gives me his blessings from his heart." Gadadhar Pandit gave his blessings. But he had a condition, unconditional condition. "Just come to my house and let me feed you prasad, then I'll give you all blessings." And he came. And he cooked like nectar. Would you like to hear another story? Srikanta Sen was relative of Shivananda Sen. He came to Puri to visit Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya really stunned everyone. He told Srikanta Sen, "Go back to Bengal and tell Shivananda Sen and all the devotees they should not come to Puri this year." Every year, Shivananda Sen would bring hundreds of devotees from Bengal to Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya to celebrate Ratha Yatra and remain with him for 4 months. Said, "Do not come to Puri because I will come to Bengal to visit your home, Shivananda Sen, in Kumarahatta during the month of Paush." Oh, when they got that news from Srikanta Sen, they were so happy. They were just anticipating, looking forward for that month to come where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to come and bless their homes and bless their village and give his darshan. They were so much looking forward. The month of Paush came. Each day they were expecting the Lord to appear. But there was no sign. In those days, there was no internet to ask, "Where is Lord Chaitanya today?" There wasn't a website showing where he was each day. There was no telephones, there was no telex, there was no radios. The only communication really was, "If the Lord comes, we know he's here." So they were waiting and waiting and waiting, and the day after day passed. And there was only a few days left in the month, and the Lord had not come. Shivananda Sen was then living together with Jagadananda Pandit, and they became very, very depressed. Not depressed, but despondent. There's a difference. They were very despondent because the Lord had not come. They were just weeping and crying in separation from the Lord, anticipating His arrival, and He didn't come. So at that time, who do you think arrived at Shivananda Sen's house? Narasinghananda Brahmachari. Shall I continue? He saw Shivananda Sen, Jagadananda Pandit, and the other devotees. They were really, really sad. He said, "What's wrong?" And they explained, "We didn't go to Puri this year because the Lord said He was going to come in the month of Paush, and it's practically a few days left in the month, and He has not come." And Narasinghananda Brahmachari said, "He's coming, He's coming. I will bring Him here. I have that power. I will bring Him here within 3 days. Just wait and see." They knew Narasinghananda Brahmachari's power of devotion. So Jagadananda Pandit and Shivananda Sen became very happy. They had faith. So you know what Narasinghananda Brahmachari did? He sat in meditation, bringing the Lord. For 2 days, he just sat in meditation, bringing the Lord. He wasn't meditating on a light bulb. It wasn't like that. He was meditating on serving the beautiful form of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu and bringing Him. And after 2 days, he came out of his meditation ecstatically. He said, "Lord Chaitanya has come to Panihati in Bengal. He'll be here tomorrow in Kumarahata at your own house, Shivananda Sen. We should honor Him. We should have a glorious feast in His honor. Please bring me all the ingredients and I will cook." So Shivananda Sen and Jagadananda Pandit had faith. So they brought all sorts of very, very nice preparations. Shivananda Sen was Grihastha. He had these facilities. And Narasinghananda Brahmachari cooked incredible feast of so many sweets and so many sabjis and delicious rice covered with golden ghee. Now this was not meditation. This was... when you have the facility, you don't just meditate, you do it. Yes, it has to be real. So he made this incredible feast, and he brought it into the altar room, and everyone was outside. And Narasinghananda Brahmachari made 3 plates. One for the deity of Lord Jagannath, one for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and one for his worshipable Ishtadev, Sri Narasingha Dev. And he offered fantastic place, a feast of bhoga to each of the deities. And then he sat in meditation and asked Lord Chaitanya, Jagannath, and Narasingha Dev to accept his humble offering. And while he was sitting on the altar, right before his eyes, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his physical form appeared and ate everything on his plate. And he liked it so much, he ate everything on Jagannath's plate. And he liked it so much, he went and started eating everything off Narasinghadev's plate. And Narasinghananda Brahmachari started crying out, "Alas, alas, my Lord, what are you doing? I know you're not different than Jagannath, but you're eating everything from Lord Narasinghadev's plate. Today, Lord Narasingha will have to fast because you ate everything from his plate." And he began to cry in this way. And as he was crying in this way, not crying tears, but just crying in an astonishment, actually he was very pleased. He was totally happy. But just for the Lord's pleasure, he was saying these things. So Shivananda Sen, Jagadananda Pandit came running. What's happening? What's happening? He said, the Lord has come. He said, I'll tell you exactly what happened. Lord Chaitanya came here exactly according to his promise. And he ate the whole feast. Look, there's nothing on the plates. Then he ate everything on Jagannath's plate. Then he ate everything on Narasingadev's plate. And I'm a devotee of Narasingadev. I have vowed to prepare something every day. Now my Lord is fasting. Please bring more ingredients. I have to cook another feast. They were very astonished. They actually did not know what to think. So they brought more ingredients. And Narasinghananda Brahmachari made another feast and offered it to Lord Narasinghadev. And he explained to the devotees that Lord Chaitanya came here, he accepted all of our prasad, and then he returned to Panihati, and then returned to Puri again. He returned to Puri, yes, he's already returned to Puri. The next year, they all went to Jagannath Puri. And one day, spontaneously, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to glorify Narasinghananda Brahmachari right in the presence of all the other devotees, including Shivananda Sen and Jagadananda Pandit. And he said, last year, in the month of Paush, I came to Kumarahatta, to the house of Shivananda Sen, where Narasinghananda Brahmachari cooked me a wonderful feast with so many sweets and sabjis, and he was describing it so nicely. And I was so happy. Such food, it tasted like nectar. Then Shivananda Sen understood the power of Narasinghananda Brahmachari's love. So these are extraordinary examples. But the principle we must understand is Krishna consciousness is a matter of consciousness. The Lord is pleased by our desire to serve, desire to please. The Lord finds satisfaction by our humility, our gratitude, our enthusiasm, and our determination to serve Him. And if that desire is freed of the contaminations of desire for selfish enjoyment, either sense enjoyment in the form of the gross senses, or desire for profit, adoration, or distinction. If the Lord sees we are not performing our service for the purpose of liberation or powers, but we're simply doing it as an expression of it. If we don't have love, we're doing it as an expression of our intent to show love, to please Him. If that is our motivation, we may not be on that platform, but if that is our aspiration, if that is our motivation, then Krishna will accept our offering with such happiness. And in His accepting our offering, our heart becomes clean and our love for Him awakens. And then know, there is no material consideration, there is no material condition that has the power to obstruct a devotee's service. Because bhakti is not simply what is seen with the eyes or perceived through the senses. Bhakti is Krishna reciprocating with the intention of our heart. And to make that intention pure, the Lord has descended in His holy names to cleanse our hearts. The greatest benedictions is the association of devotees and the chanting of the holy names. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained in this way, just serve the servants of Krishna and chant Harinam and you will attain perfection. Grihe thako, vane thako, sada hari bole thako. Whether one is a grihasta with husband, wife, children, all kinds of debts and occupational duties, or whether one is a brahmachari living on an ashram, or whether one is a sannyasi just traveling around, doesn't matter. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, in the association of devotees, just be the servant of the servant and attain the perfection of life simply chanting the holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai, Ananti Koti Vaishnava Brinda ki jai. Thank you very much. His Grace Radhakund Prabhu, back to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Great enthusiasm. Very, very dear God brother. Can we give microphone?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I want to thank Maharaj for allowing me to sit with his and to be here in front of all you great people. And I also want to offer my apologies for the past. If I've ever mismanaged my enthusiasm, not knowing how to speak properly, maybe not how to conduct myself very well. And if I've ever offended any of you, I certainly beg very sincerely that you please forgive me. And to understand gratitude, Maharaj is mentioning, there's one small story about a man who was poor, similar to like Sudama, and he had one crow friend who had mystic power. And he came to his friend, the Brahmin, and he asked his Brahmin friend, so how are things? And he said, well, right now everything is not going so nicely. My wife has only got one sari, and we're struggling very difficult to get to eat every day. And so the crow said, well, I have some Rakshasa friends who are mystic cities, and they may be able to help you. Go to see them. So the Brahmin went to these Rakshasas and said, well, you know, he says, are you the friend of our friend, the crow? And he says, yes, I am. And he says, well, we already know your problem, and we've already solved your problem. Now you go back to your house and you see. So he went back. There he saw opulence beyond imagination, fountains and beautiful palace, and his wife all fat and chubby and filled with silk cloth and jewels, and everything is going very nicely. So the crow came one day after some time and said, oh, my dear friend, the Brahmin, how are you doing? I see everything seems to be going well for you. And he says, who do you think you are talking to me like this? Get out of here. I don't want to see you. Who are you? He says, wait a second. What are you talking about? It's because of me. You have all these things. He says, you keep talking to me and I'm going to rip your head off. He says, how can you be talking like that? And he grabs him and he rips his head off. Well, the Rakshasas, being with their mystic cities, they understood that their friend the crow had just been killed. So they were very upset, and they came to this Brahmin man. And he says, you've killed the man, you killed the person who was responsible for all of your success. Therefore, we kill you. So they killed the Brahmin. Now, these Rakshasas are man-eaters, but they would not eat this body. So they had friends that were man-eaters, and they took this body to these man-eaters and said, here you go, boys, breakfast. And the boys, these man-eaters said, well, you guys are also eat meat, eat men. Why aren't you eating him? He said, because he's ungrateful. We will not eat his body. So he said, well, if he's so contaminated, well, then we don't want to eat him either. So the conclusion is that a person who's not grateful, his body is not even worth being eaten by a man, by even being worth eating. So gratitude is one of the most greatest of qualities. And gratitude is shown in so many ways. And Maharaj was wonderfully giving such nice stories that if we remember Krishna, and that we try to render that service, not physical service, you know, which is also, you know, very important, but to hear, to glorify, and to remember. This is what the Shastras really say more than any other thing. Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion 65 times, to always remember Krishna and never forget. He says 132 times, to hear. And he says to hear from advanced devotees 48 times. And to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus feet of the Lord are not just by seeing the toenails and that cross foot, but to see the 19 signs on the bottom of his feet. The barley corn, the jhon, the chakra, the urdhvareka, the padma, the ankush, the dwaja, the vajra, the chatri, the ashtakona, the maharaj. Then repeat it. Because it's that process of shravanam, kirtanam, and then smaranam. Because when you remember Krishna, then you're in devotional service, you're in Chintamani Dham. You're in that place by which that place, that nectar for which you're always anxious for, you achieve it. And it's practical. You can do it. It's not theoretical or philosophical. It's very practical. Read something, tell somebody, and remember. Krishna is like the ocean, and Radharani is like the life in that ocean. Something simple, only took a couple seconds, but you say it to 20, 30 people, and you got yourself, you'll remember that the rest of your life. Always remember Krishna, never forget. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada.
And in deepest gratitude to Shyam Sundar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.